Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Bruce. I'm John Taylor from Urbana, representing the defendant, Philip Jones. As to the second and third issue in our brief alleging plain error, we abandon those arguments, Your Honors. We address only the first argument. That argument, Your Honor, is that the trial court here did not conduct any sufficient hearing on the motion in limine to exclude the prior two convictions, Your Honor, of my client, that being the April 99 conviction for possession of cannabis with intent to deliver, Your Honors, and that being the 10-14-94 conviction for attempted delivery of controlled substance. The appendix, the short appendix of our brief, Your Honors, contains the colloquy between the court and Mr. Chambly, my predecessor counsel on this case, who was later relieved from duty in this case, Your Honors. And the short appendix reveals that the court discussed in general those exceptions under 404B, plan, intent, knowledge, but the court did not identify in that particular colloquy what particular exception the court was relying upon in determining and weighing whether or not the probative value of that exception was outweighed by the prejudicial effect of the defendant's bad character, that is, the two prior convictions being put into evidence.
Why isn't it pretty clear from this record, though, that the judge was taking some care with this? He decides, for example, to make sure that the fact that it's cocaine is not mentioned. The judge isn't just sort of letting it all fly in without any review. And the government points out that this is a specific intent crime. But why does the judge have to march through every single one of the 404B exceptions and identify them all?
Judge, I did a lot of things wrong in this case, but one thing I didn't do wrong was I asked the court on the record, please, Judge, exclude the reference to cocaine because we have a cocaine case here, and Judge did that, Your Honor. Judge McCuskey very, very carefully, and you're right, Your Honor, he, I think, went out of his way on that occasion to say, I've already left this in. I'm going to not let anything more else than I have
already. Yeah, he drew a perfectly reasonable line.
I think that the question becomes, Your Honor, as I looked at the Best case and some of the other cases that are cited, I couldn't find in the Best case any reference to, in particular, in that case, Your Honor, what type of record examination the trial court judge did in this regard, Your Honor. In the motion in limine, was it first identified by the government or by a defendant, Your Honor? Is it intent? Is it knowledge, Your Honor? Is it plan? What is it? And then it seems to me that the judge should engage in some exercise on the record, Your Honor, and the practice with which I'm familiar is the court accepts proffers from the two attorneys. Say, you know, Mr. Taylor, you've raised this issue. What do you think the evidence will be at trial, combined with the exception, that is the two convictions, that will render this particular evidence more prejudicial than probative? That's how we generally do things, Judge. Whether it's right or not, that's how we do it. In this particular case, that didn't happen.
Was there a relevance objection as part of this package?
I'm going to say no, Your Honor, that there was not.
So we just take it that this evidence is indeed relevant to some issue in the case.
Judge, I'm not sure I'm with you, but I'll try. If it was identified as to whether it was intent or plan or knowledge, Your Honor, if we knew which exception it was, Your Honor, we could then say it was relevant or irrelevant.
That might have been a reason for making a relevance objection. Get the prosecutor to state what this is relevant to, and then perhaps the judge would have told the jury, use it only for this thing that it's relevant to. The prosecutor's theory on appeal seems to be that this prior conviction shows that the defendant knew this stunt about, you know, stopping and then speeding up when the officer gets out and hoping that ejecting the drugs out the window won't be noticed. That seems something of a stretch. I bet there are an awful lot of drug dealers who either don't know that or have never done it or something like that. But if so, we could focus on, clearly the judge could have focused the jury on what it was relevant to. But that, apparently no one suggested that the focus be brought to what it was relevant to.
I'll concede that, Judge. But I'll also add to that, Your Honor, the burden on admission of 404B evidence, Your Honor, is not upon the defendant.
Look, 404B, I have a problem with both sides' briefs. Both of you think of 404 as a rule of admission. It's not. It's a rule of exclusion. Evidence is admitted if it is relevant. And then it has to be more probative than prejudicial. And after that, we apply Rule 404B, which says even then it can't be admitted if. Right? Rule 404B is not a reason evidence comes in. It's exclusively a reason evidence stays out. And you, as the proponent of evidence staying out, bore whatever burden there is. On the relevance question, prosecutor, as proponent of having it come in, would bear whatever burden there is.
Judge, it seems to me that 404B first states the rule and then the exception. I believe that the court
It's a rule of not admissible unless. It's a rule of exclusion.
We filed the motion.
Forward, actually.
We filed the motion in limine, Your Honor. The burden on that motion is not with us under 404B. It's with the government. The court did not identify a particular exception at that time, and we were unable, Your Honor, there at that time to bring before the court's attention the other evidence that might come in throughout the case that might make whatever specific exception that the government was attempting to prove, Your Honor, outweighed by the prejudicial effect. For instance, Your Honor, we know that in the facts in this case that the only witness in the sense of an eyewitness was Anita Gray, who was sitting with the defendant. We have a trooper, Your Honor, Devine. I see where we're going. Trooper Devine stated in his testimony, Your Honor, in the transcript, that he did not see who threw the bag of cocaine out of the passenger side window where Anita Gray was sitting. He did not see that, Your Honor. No one saw my client in possession of the cocaine. The testimony of Lovelace and of Doremus was that they had prior dealings with my client wherein he had dealt cocaine in their presence. There was a jailhouse admission by my client to one of the cooperating witnesses that in fact he had been with Anita Gray in Chicago, had been coming back with her from Chicago, Your Honor. But when I bring that point that there's no eyewitness, Your Honor, we don't have a typical drug case where you have a confidential source actually witnessing a particular defendant engaging in a drug transaction. We don't have the case where there's a partial or entire confession by a defendant that he's been dealing drugs, Your Honor. What we have here, Your Honor, is Anita Gray, who stated it was my client's drugs, and he threw them out the window, and she had gone with him to Chicago at his request, Your Honor. That's why we feel that the court, when we consider all the evidence, and if the 404B motion in limine would have included, one, what the exception was, and two, there would have been proffers as to where the evidence was going, we believe the court would have been in a better position to judge whether or not the prejudicial effect of allowing in those two prior convictions outweighed the probative effect or the probative value to the government. Your Honor, is there any questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Bruce.
May it please the court, Colin Bruce on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, I would respectfully dispute with what my colleague and friend Mr. Taylor just said. There was more than one eyewitness to this case. Officer Trooper Devine, State Trooper Devine.
Yes, let's not worry about that. Let's worry about the use of these convictions. What were the convictions relevant to?
Well, Your Honor, first they went directly to the issue of Mr. Jones's knowledge of what I'll call the drive and ditch technique. I agree with
you. Is it your position that anybody who has a drug conviction on his record knows this technique? Is it taught in drug dealer school or something?
Absolutely
like that?
Not, Your Honor. But at issue was whether or not
there's a certificate of completion or Southern Illinois Drug Dealers Inc.
We consider ourselves central Illinois, Your Honor. No, Your Honor.
Maybe he knows about it just by having been in prison, that this is the common vocational skill taught in prison.
Well, Your Honor, actually, I can't say as to whether he learned it in prison or not, but the expert testimony offered was that a technique used by experienced drug traffickers was to, when stopped by a state police officer, wait for the officer to approach, drive off a certain distance, hopefully far enough away from the trooper that they wouldn't see, throw the contraband, whatever it was, in this case cocaine, out onto the grass.
Is that because troopers are instructed not to fire at fleeing vehicles?
Not to fire at a fleeing vehicle?
Yeah.
But I don't see what in the record shows that this technique was used in these prior convictions. I think that's what Judge Easterbrook's getting at. Unless you had something like a one-to-one correspondence between drug convictions in the past and
this
use of this technique.
You weren't offering this conviction to show that this was his M.O.
You must have had some other purpose for it.
Well, it was his M.O. at this time to try and escape.
No, an M.O. means you do it repeatedly. You weren't offering it to show
no.
that he did this repeatedly.
That's correct. That's correct. I'm sorry, Judge, would you ask me a question? I didn't hear
what. No, I was just saying, it's the leap from prior drug conviction to use of the pitch it out the window technique that seems excessive.
Well, the way I viewed it was, this isn't a case where you have drugs in a house where multiple people can get to the drugs. This is a case where you have two people in a car, and if the videotape shows from the trooper's vehicle, somebody is throwing
sure,
a
no,
can out of the car.
I understand.
So now the jury has to decide, if we have the burden of proof, we have to prove every element, that was it either A, Mr. Jones by himself, B, Mr. Jones assisting the passenger Anita Gray, or in the third instance, Anita Gray by herself duping Mr. Jones and just coincidentally throwing out a few speeds away for some unknown reason.
Right, and the fact that the drugs are already in the car, it seems to me there must be 1,000 cases where people have been charged with constructive possession of drugs that are inside a car, and sometimes that can be refuted if it's really clear that the person had no idea that the drugs were inside the car, but the government routinely argues that it's really enough to show that the drugs were in the car, as these drugs plainly were, as the videotape from Trooper Devine's car shows. So the case comes up in an odd posture. I thought you were arguing that this showed that, he intended to be dealing drugs, you know.
Well, I offer for several reasons. Number one, as I said, this knowledge of drug trafficking techniques, the drive-and-ditch technique. Number two, as the court said in Best, simply his intent to commit the crime charged.
That sounds like it's a pure propensity argument.
That, Your Honor, the trouble I have with Best is it walks you up to what I'll call the precipice. I rely upon Best more or less as a guardrail. The language of Best indicates that you can introduce prior convictions to the intent crime directly to address the issue of whether or not the defendant intended to commit the crime.
I don't understand that at all. That would just amount to a negation of Rule 404. Surely the decision means something other than that.
Well, I think it applies to specific intent crimes, where one of the elements the government has to prove is that the defendant intended.
Yeah, but you don't show that he intended to do this by proving that he committed some other offense. That's the very propensity inference that the rule is supposed to get rid of. If the argument were, you know, he didn't intend to deal drugs because he didn't know that this substance was cocaine, showing a prior cocaine conviction would show that, indeed, he knew very well the difference between cocaine and sugar. But that didn't appear to be an issue in this case.
Well, Your Honor, thinking about your question, then, I guess that would mean we'd have to know the defense before we tried to offer the 404B evidence, if I follow you correctly, and I'm not sure that would not place an unfair
burden. It might be that their particular evidence is not useful for any admissible purpose, not relevant, doesn't come within Rule 404B until a rebuttal case. That's actually perfectly normal for kinds of evidence that become useful in a rebuttal case.
All I can say in response is, in this case,
I'm very troubled by the argument, which seems to be your brief, that any drug offense may be used to prove any other drug offense just as a matter of law. If we can show this guy ever violated the drug laws in the past, we're entitled to parade that before the jury routinely, case in and case out.
That was, that's not the thrust of the argument, Your Honor. The thrust.
Well, then I don't understand what your argument is.
My argument is
if you think that drug offenses are specific intent offenses and prior convictions can always be used to show specific intent, you are arguing that in every drug case, as a matter of law, any prior drug transaction is admissible. That's what the argument means.
I believe under Beth, in a specific intent drug offense, conspiracy or in this case possession with intent, you can show prior drug convictions to show the defendant intended to commit the crime.
They all require intent of something. Drug offenses are not absolute liability crimes. That's the meaning of your argument. You can deny it all you want, but as long as you think that's what makes this admissible, that drug offenses have an intent requirement, then you're saying that in every federal drug prosecution, all prior drug transactions are admissible.
Well, I don't think all.
And that can't be right.
Well, first off, the district court have to engage in the analysis and especially determine if it was more prejudicial than probative. Again, the thrust of my intent in introducing the convictions in this case was because the expert testimony regarding the drive and ditch technique, which is exactly what the defendant in this case did. The testimony was that people involved in drug trafficking are familiar with this. Some, not all, are familiar with this.
Was there an argument made either to the judge or the jury that that's what this evidence is for and nothing else?
There was an argument made to the jury that it was. That was one of the arguments that I raised. I don't think there was no argument raised by either counsel.
The judge's instruction is useless. It's an instruction that just names the statutory list and doesn't tell the jury what actually to do with this evidence.
Your Honor, I would say that the instruction is from Pattern Instruction 3.04, and presumably the jury follows it and limits that evidence.
I have no idea what it means to limit your evidence to just recite the language. If you're a layperson, you come into the legal system, and the judge says, this evidence may be used for proof of motive, opportunity, intent, preparation, plan, knowledge, identity, or absence of mistake or accident.
What does that mean? It means you can't consider it as direct evidence of guilt. You want to avoid the propensity argument. He's done it before, he did it again. The jury cannot consider that.
Look, you're contradicting yourself. If it's admissible for intent, it is admissible for direct evidence of guilt. Intent is an element of the crime. If this is how you seek to prove an element of the crime, you're introducing it for direct evidence of guilt.
Well, when you ask me what the layperson would think, my response remains, the layperson would say, geez, I guess we can't think the person did a crime before, so let's not consider anything else. Let's just say he's guilty of this crime. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Anything further, Mr. Taylor?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Taylor and Mr. Bruce. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.
I think 7 minutes at 4:00.